Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin. Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I am your host, Ike Evans, and today we're excited to bring you episode 146, Some Good News in Public Policy. But first, some mental health headlines. The Hogg Foundation is seeking a program fellow. We're accepting applications for a two-year entry-level fellowship program designed to prepare the fellow for an advanced career in mental health, philanthropy, or the broader nonprofit sector. For details, visit our website at hogg.utexas.edu. Our latest blog post features Olivia Droughty's prize-winning video submission for the Hogg Foundation's New Voices Showcase for Youth. The goal was to highlight the voices of young creatives aged 16 through 24 and address the question, how would the world be different if it cared about your mental health? The title of Olivia's video is If Only. You can find the blog post and her video by visiting hogg.utexas.edu. As of this recording, it is on the landing page of the blog, which you can find under News and Resources. It's a treat, and you shouldn't miss it. And finally, April is Autism Awareness Month. On many occasions, the Hogg Foundation has frequently explored the intersections between autism and mental health. And our grantees have been making a difference in improving mental health for people with autism and other intellectual and developmental disabilities. I've included links to relevant content and resources in today's show notes. In addition, we are currently running a Facebook poll on the question, if you or a loved one carries an autism diagnosis, how much harder does it make managing mental health? So far, 100% of respondents have answered that question with a moderate amount. If you have a testimonial to share on the subject of autism and mental health, feel free to email us at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu. And that does it for Mental Health Headlines. Don't be left out of the loop. Become a Hogg Insider by subscribing to Mental Health Headlines. You can find a sign-up link on our main website at hogg.utexas.edu. On April 6, 2023, Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced a $10 million fentanyl awareness campaign. This will include the Texas Division of Emergency Management delivering a total of 20,000 doses of the overdose-reversing medication naloxone, more commonly known as Narcan, to all 254 counties in Texas. The distribution of naloxone is a key plank of the harm reduction movement, which advocates for less punitive, more treatment-centered approaches to substance use conditions. Harm reduction has been making a slow and steady climb toward mainstream acceptance, and there are signs here in Texas that it may finally have broken through. Our guest for today, J.J. Ramirez, is a policy fellow for Texas Harm Reduction Alliance, a statewide organization that aims to end the drug war and its harms through harm reduction, training, advocacy, and organizing. Texas Harm Reduction Alliance is also a grantee of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, receiving a policy fellows grant in 2022. J.J., how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me here.
All right. So our listeners would love to know more about you and your work for Texas Harm Reduction Alliance.
Cool. So, yeah, I'm a policy fellow. My role at Texas Harm Reduction is as an organizer. So, like, we organize people who are living, who are unhoused, who use drugs, who've been incarcerated, recently released. And largely those three buckets are who develop our organizing project. And we believe that mobilizing people in order to effect policy change is the best method for change. And it's been going very well.
The CDC estimates that over 5,000 Texans are dying of drug-related overdose each year, and fentanyl-related deaths rose almost 400% in 2021. Is it your sense that state policy on this issue is heading in the right direction?
At the state level right now, there's just a very hard disconnect between drug users and criminality. Drugs are illegal in the state of Texas at all levels. At the state level, all drugs are illegal. So when trying to combat an opioid death epidemic, they very much use the same tools that they've used previously for heroin, for all of the drugs, and they seem to focus on the criminality aspect of it, of just utilizing the hammer to fix the problem. We arrest enough people, then the problem will go away, and that's just not the case. It has never worked. We have introduced a few bills to try to mitigate the effects of opioid use, the fatality risk of it, by introducing bills around harm reduction, safe use supplies, syringe exchange, and the fentanyl testing bill that we did not put in, but we advocate for. And that would just, it's a simple drug checking tool that would allow you to test whatever substances happen to be in your vicinity and to see whether or not fentanyl is in it. And we thought we had support. We thought the governor had tapped Representative Oliverson specifically to pass this bill. It mm-hmm. has passed the Senate, or excuse me, it's passed the House, but is being hung up in the Senate. And I even want to kind of delve a little bit more into that, because while we support the fentanyl testing strip bill, it's also not enough. We worked very hard trying to get Oliverson and the many other representatives who signed filed a very similar bill, and few senators as well, to add just a simple phrase of other adulterants on, because quite frankly, fentanyl has been around for a long time, and this measure now is about 5 years late. There's forget the name of it right now, but it's a tranquilizer that's like they're using it in a lot of drugs to like synthesize an opioid effect, and it is causing mass amounts of overdose. But instead of getting ahead of that and just having that also be legalized, where you can check for this for whatever drugs that happen to come in the future, we're only focusing on fentanyl because it's in the news and it's what the governor has said. And we feel it's just missed opportunity to get ahead of future problems. But because of the stigmatization around drug use, these bills, these representatives don't really seem to want to like get too ahead of drug use or drug fatalities, should I say. Mm-hmm. And then additionally, it's HB 645, which is a drug-induced homicide, which we also like extremely oppose, right? Because you're talking about, and there's a horrendous example of this mother, and her son's name is escaping me, but this is kind of the narrative that is forming around this mm-hmm. bill.
Yeah.
Her son passed away, unfortunately, from fentanyl that was in Xanax, and not even another opioid. So what the bill aims to do is put a murder charge on the dealer of the fentanyl. And more often than not, you're just going to target family members, co-users, and it's going to cause more harm than good. And it doesn't solve the issue, right? Drug checking tools, education, these help mitigate, safe use supplies help mitigate overdose. Increased incarceration is not going to change whether or not someone wants to use.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, fentanyl is the drug of choice of some users. So it's just not the best method to go about trying to solve a crisis when the same methods have been tried previously, like I mentioned, in the heroin epidemic of the 70s, and it just didn't work. Deaths didn't come down. All it did was lead to mass incarceration of predominantly Black and brown people. And it just got kind of swept under the rug. Nothing ever really changed. If you really want to introduce good bills that would save lives. You would make it. Thankfully, the FDA just made it where you can now buy Narcan over the counter. But prior to that, Narcan, naloxone, opioid reversing medications that are harmless to anybody, unless you are, and it's not even harmful to someone on an overdose. It blocks the opioids and brings you out of an overdose. So,
okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
So, you being a Hog Policy Fellow, I'd sure love to know more about your own activities since your fellowship began.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, this current legislative session. And what successes have you had, or just things that you are hopeful about?
Cool. So, at the state level, not too much. We testified against, we have a syringe exchange, HB 1403. It was filed by Moody. This would allow for 7 counties who volunteered to be part of this program to receive a drug prevention, a disease prevention pilot program. So this would be a syringe service program where people who use injection drugs could come and mitigate the effects of IV drug use, right? HIV, hepatitis, septic infection. And where previously we had good hopes for that originally, because last session that bill made it through the House and got stalled out in the Senate. But this session, it is still pending in county affairs. There's 40 some days left in the session. But there are other things to be happy about, right? Like, so we can stay at the state level for just one more bill. HB 1677 by Jotun was a. Making driver's license and birth certificates free for all unhoused individuals. And so that is our organizing project largely. So just to have people tell me like this would help them like drastically, from the statewide camping ban, people's getting their entire possessions swept up and thrown in trash. This includes driver's license. This includes birth certificates, having to get around town to save up money to get on a bus, to go here, to pay for a driver's license, to wait, to get money, to get back on a bus, to do this to her birth certificate, all to have it thrown away in an upcoming sweep. It was like, it's very uplifting. I did mention that it's like the very smallest thing the state has done in the step of like trying to end the homelessness crisis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's out of committee. Fingers crossed. Now, at the local level, we've had much more success. And as I mentioned, the transportation issue, our organizing project organized around transportation in the city of Austin, and we, through Cap Metro, we've got them to commit and are working towards a free fares program for all unhoused Austinites indefinitely. So this started with just the free rides to the cooling centers when it was above 105 degrees. Us, members of our organizing project, would go to these Cap Metro board meetings and tell them it's 105. It's been too hot. And then it was like, okay, well, we'll make it 103 as the threshold. And we're like, it's been too hot. 103, 105, what's the difference? And through that ongoing fight and process, we eventually got them to understand that you're collecting fares from people who have no money, and this is not necessary. And in that, we won that fight. And now we have free transportation. Well, at the moment, we have 31-day bus passes that anybody can go to any homelessness response or homelessness service provider and get a bus pass with no questions asked and go wherever they need to go. Additionally, currently we're now starting our new campaign on housing. The city of Austin is drastically underfunded when it comes to providing housing or homelessness response or to mitigate this process. And they're really relying on what they're calling rapid rehousing assistance. And so what that is they go out in the community, or people unhoused come to a service provider. They do what they call a coordinated assessment. They get a score based on their a variety of reasons: mental health, drug use, incarceration, gender, race, a variety of reasons. And they get a score, and it determines whether they're able to get on permanent supportive housing, which is a permanent program that would be combined with assistance, either be a caseworker, mental health access. But more often than not, people choose the rapid rehousing because it's the most available. It's what the city uses to rehouse people. And all that is 6 months to a year of paid rent. And at the end of the lease, the person is required to pay the rent. But like I said, more often than not, most of those people qualify for permanent supportive housing, take that because it's either that or the street. And so there's a big turnover to homelessness. And so we're mobilized. We just had a town hall. We had almost about 200 individuals from around the city who are homeless come to the town hall. We invited the Housing Strategy Office and ECHO, which is one of the largest nonprofits. They kind of are the focal point for the distribution of funding. They run the HMIS system, which is escaping me, but it is what they use to run the coordinated assessment. It's like the data collection for that coordinated assessment I was mentioning. Mm-hmm. And we asked them a bunch of very pointed questions. What is their goals for 2023? What is their responsibilities for the community and so on? And in that question and answer, people from the community were able to ask the city and ECHO directly, what is happening? How is this affecting me? Where's the money going? And we're taking that Q&A session, mobilizing the community who was there, and we're going to start working on the budget cycle. Once the city starts, the city of Austin's is really soon about to start the budget cycle, and we're going to use that to mobilize to advocate for more funding for housing.
Okay, so JJ, it is always important to stress that you, along with the rest of your cohort, are a mental health policy fellow. And I would love to know what you have come to learn about mental health and how that informs your work.
Very much so. So homelessness, drug use, mental health is the need for mental health and the reason mental health issues, all of that is very much intertwined. They are not separate from each other. Not everybody who's a drug user is, well, according to the DSM-5 or whatever, right? Drug use is a mental disorder, but not everybody is in drastic needs of mental services, but same thing in homelessness response. But the cases are prevalent there. So the reason that I think that they're so intertwined is because the reasons I just mentioned. But my work as an organizer and a policy analyst, fellow city analyst, is to tie all that in together and let the community, let the state know that these resources need to be provided to these very underprivileged, often stigmatized communities because they are mental health issues. And then we do as well try to focus the public health aspect of it. It's a lot where our policy work tries to fall into is the public health areas of the state and the city, because it is the case. Like that is just how it works, and it is the case. So as a policy fellow, mental health and organizing in these specific realms go very much hand to hand.
Do you have any personal stories from either your own or anyone else's life that really testifies to the impact, JJ, that you're hoping to have or have had?
Extremely. I haven't even mentioned the fact that in Travis County, the reason that an opioid overdose crisis was happening is because of THRA. Because of the organizing and advocacy of THRA, we got the city, first the county, Travis County, to admit there was a crisis, and then the city, which rolled out, I don't want to put a number on it, but it has to be close to a million, or if not more, in Narcan and naloxone disbursements. And I know people personally who have reversed overdoses, who have lived to see another day, to experience whatever life may be, recovery, whatever, right? They're alive. And that was directly because of the organizing and advocacy of THRA. Naloxone Narcan is now being placed homelessness service providers like Sunrise, Trinity Center. These are two very big entities in Austin. They have Narcan, essentially a vending machine that you pay no money to. Outside of that, our organizing work at the state level, like specifically around the driver's license campaign, like just having people in the street like feel that they're not, you know, worthless, right? That their voice matters. You may be homeless or unhoused, but you are still a member of our community. Your voice still matters in the political process. And just hearing that, hearing people feel like they have a place of belonging, a place of community, a THRA, I'm constantly hearing it. This place is a community. I am not stigmatized here. I feel safe here. And just having that experience, letting people know that what the work we're doing, you are very much a part of it. It is not me, it is us. And seeing the realization that is actually the truth is amazing.
Okay. Where can people go who want to know more, either just about you or about the Texas Harm Reduction Alliance, or help support your efforts?
For sure. You can go to, you can Google Texas Harm Reduction Alliance, THRA, or the actual website is harmreductiontx.org. We have volunteer services. You can obviously always donate. Everybody needs money. And we also have like a what we're about. We have bills that we champion. And yeah, so Texas Harm Reduction Alliance or on Google or harmreductiontx.org.
All right. Well, JJ, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to our audience. One of the pleasures of doing this podcast is how often I get the opportunity to visit with our policy fellows. Mm-hmm. Just because it is such it's one of the things that we hang our hat on as an organization, just the investments that we've made over the past decade plus, trying to build a cadre of mental health organizations that, you know, have the wherewithal to try to do policy in a challenging environment like Texas. And
yeah,
so
very much so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
At this time, I would like to mention a couple of great companion pieces to the interview that you just heard. The first is our policy priorities brief, which you can find on the homepage of our website, hogg.utexas.edu. The other is the update to the fifth edition of A Guide to Understanding Mental Health Systems and Services in Texas, our one-of-a-kind comprehensive guide to the Texas mental health system. If you truly care about mental health policy and the vast and complex array of agencies, rules, and institutions that oversee mental health in our state, you should absolutely check it out. It can be found on the policy engagement page of our website under the What We Do section of the top menu. And that does it for this episode. We're so glad that you could join us. Production assistance by Anna Harris, Kate Rooney, and Daryl Wiggins. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave us a review, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, TuneIn, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Taking us out now is Anna's Good Vibes. Thanks for joining us.